This is Colourful Radio. Wrapped up productions there from Misha Paris. Time is 10 minutes past 9 and I'm very, very excited because we have been joined in the studio by two absolute legends.
They are Sir Vivian Richards and Richie Richardson, two men who represent what is best about the world of cricket, about the Caribbean region, who make us feel proud and remind us of the glory days when we were kings. Remember those days when we were kings? Let's say hello to them formally. Sir Viv, hello, how are you doing?
Hi, good morning.
Wonderful. And Richie, how are you?
I'm good. I'm in a very colourful mood this morning.
Very good. We are as well. And now, first of all, let's find out what you're doing here at this time in this country. What's going on, Sir Viv?
Well, we are basically here representing our country where the tourism package is concerned. Mm-hmm. We're here at World Travel Market. It's all about strutting your stuff and just letting the folks know where you're at, that you stand that you're with, and hopefully you can get a lot of bodies to your shows, because certainly we are a destination, paradise, if you may, for that matter.
Yeah, and what's it been like over the past few days? Because I know you've had a very, very busy schedule, haven't you?
It's been great. It's been just wonderful to just interact, to meet old friends, and folks know that we have been coming here for a few years now, so
yes.
Actually they look forward to seeing us. It's a great meeting place.
Excellent. And how's it been for you, Richie? I mean, have you been happy? I think you maybe spend more time here, don't you? Is that right at the moment?
Yeah, I'm usually here during the summer playing for Lashings, and I was playing with James Ditton earlier during the summer. But the World Travel Market is a very exciting place. You get an opportunity to meet a lot of people from various parts of the world, you know, and people do lots of business, and we're basically here to promote Antigua and Barbuda, you know, the number one tourism destination in the Eastern Caribbean. You know.
I love it as a press release comes out of your mouth. It's absolutely beautiful, isn't it?
It's not exactly a hard sell, is it? Selling Antigua, I'm sure.
No, I mean, you know, we're a beautiful place. Wonderful weather throughout the year. 365 beautiful white sandy beaches. And in Barbuda, we've got a few beaches that's got pink sand.
Wow.
So, you know, we're very proud of our country, and we come to World Travel Market to let the world know and to remind those who have been that, you know, we're still one of the most exciting places to come on your holiday.
And when you're standing there at the stand and people, and it's thousands of people, it's a massive, massive, I think it's the biggest tourism and travel industry event that they have in this country. What kind of responses are you getting? Now, I know your faces very, very well indeed, because I remember from the 70s, in your case, Viv, Richie, you're a bit younger, from the 80s and 90s all the way through to your retirement, etc., and then the emergence of the Australian Massive, and boy, have they taken over. But I remember the glory days, and when I saw you for the first time on Friday, because little people don't know, but it's a little boat tour that was organized by the Antiguan Tourism Board, and when I realized that you were actually standing there, I was very, very excited. I genuinely was, because there are some people who transcend their sport, and that's where they become icons, and I would say that in your case. What kind of responses are you getting from the people as they walk up to you and see that it's really you?
Well, it's pretty normal at times, because there's a lot of curiosity, which I think are involved as well, and especially when you have these little bats, and as you know, it is an international sort of event. There would be folks, you know, who would be coming, not really like the Japanese or Chinese, and they all come and want to know, have a look at you, and
do they know who you are?
Yeah, they want to know who you are and things like that. And they go ask questions and things like that, and it's important in that way, because we're spreading what Antigua and Barbuda is all about. I think that's basically what it's all about, you know. We're just so excited and just extremely happy for what's happening.
Okay, that's the voice of Sir Vivian Richards. In the house as well, Richie Richardson. And we want you to get involved in this, folks, so please do text us. Get in touch, 80818. That's 80818. Start your text with the word colourful, leave a space, and then your message. Or you can go to the website, colourfulradio.com, and click on email me. We're also going to be taking your calls in this hour. The number is 0800 999 8090. That's 0800 999 8090. If you want to say hi to Viv or Richie, if you want to ask them any questions, do get in touch.
Right. Now, we obviously have to talk about cricket, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the state of cricket right now, you know, we've got 2020s happening, both local teams as well as national teams. A lot of money in the sport these days. much more than in your day. When you look at it right now and compare it to how it was during your time, how do you feel, Saviv?
Well, I can only speak maybe on behalf of the team that we represented, the West Indies team itself, yeah. And the days, as you just briefly mentioned. Well, these were times that I just felt when we were coming to places like London, as you know, there's a whole lot of our folks, you know, who live in this part of the world and would have made this part of the world their homes. It's special to know that when you leave your home as well, that you are still in your home.
Yes.
And because of the
especially
fact...
Especially at the Oval.
The people that's involved. And what I think is most important, because we as Caribbean people always make sure that we have good food, good Caribbean food. And whenever around London, it's never short in supply,
yes,
in that particular way, you know. So we look forward to that. You come and you see your friends and relatives. And in those days, you used to have maybe a rest day. And that rest day used to be for your family somewhere in the country, you know.
Yes.
We'd go and make sure that Sunday itself... You whether it's your ackee and salt fish, your dumplings, and all the stuff from which you would have been missing, certainly when you left home, you'll get it right here when you come. You know? So these are some of the stuff, apart from the cricket.
Yes.
The excitement which I think we brought to the people themselves. And I felt, as a representative from the region itself, that I was representing a whole lot of people, people that I felt, who felt reasonably conscious like myself.
Was it quite political at that time, in the mid-70s and onto the 80s?
Well, what I felt that we had a job to do, because we were representing not just people who were at home, but folks, you know, who were here as well, and just the excitement which it brought, you know. We remember the times, whether we were playing Old Trafford or Leeds, Headingley, that folks would come from all over England.
Yes.
There'd be busloads of folks. And what I used to love is just having a little walk around when it's lunchtime and seeing everyone with the spread, the Caribbean spread. You know,
the rum.
All the various activities.
And these were days when you could bring these things into the ground.
That's right.
And the music too. I know, yeah. Richie loves music.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, it's very much part of my life, you know. You know, life is very rhythmical, and you know, when I'm playing cricket, I think of music. Whatever I do, I think of music, and it keeps me in sync, you know. And maybe that's why I've got a band today, you know.
Oh yes, of course, you play alongside Curtly Ambrose. Yeah, I'm told. What's the name of your group?
Spirited. We were part of the Big Bad Jet and the Ballhead, and this year we changed our name. And I was one of the Ballheads, you know.
They're short and dreads.
That's right. Yeah. So Viv is a Ballhead, and I'm a Ballhead as well. Viv's been a Ballhead for a long time,
a long time, man.
But talking about heads, one of the distinctive factors about you guys, particularly when you're on the field of play, is that you refuse to wear guards. This is very, very famous these days. Mm. You know, the big players like, you know, Freddie Flintoff and Kevin Peterson, they do tend to wear a helmet and a shield, because obviously they don't want to get hit on the head by a fast bowler if they read the ball wrongly. But in your case, Saviv, and people called you the Master Blaster because you had a particularly, how can I put it, they used to call it an aggressive style of play, very, very assertive, and you didn't fear the ball hitting your head. Now, tell us about how you were feeling when you walked onto the field of play, because you had a strut, you would often chew gum, and you look like a boxer going out, you know, for the final round.
Yeah, a lot of people want to know, is not wearing the helmet, was it a planned thing by you to psych the opponent out, or was it a style thing, or what?
There's a lot of everything in that, you know. What I can say is that there's this confidence which I think you have, and I felt you had. Yeah, I felt at the time that if I did put that on, because I did try it, you know, when it first came into fashion, I tried it a few times, and I did not feel comfortable at all. I guess, like, it's you sitting behind, you're strutting your stuff for you now.
Yes,
you
got
to
be
comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because it's going to be a long day, you know. And this is how I looked at it. I wasn't comfortable at all. I just felt very hot under that stuff. And I felt more than anything else, my cap. That was my savior. I felt that was
kind of burgundy
my
cap, yes.
Cap, the maroon cap.
Maroon cap, know, sorry, not maroon.
The maroon cap, which I felt that was my sort of protection, because it's the colors of the country which I was representing. And the most important thing also is the fact that you got to send a kind of a fear out there, because I've always felt fast bowlers felt they were bullies. and somebody had us to cool the bully down.
You know, somebody people like Dennis.
Yeah, somebody Jeff had Thompson. Us to cool the bully down, you know, or bullies for that matter. And this is how I looked at it, and some folks, when they used to see you walk out, would say things like, you're arrogant, so-and-so. And I felt, it was about me as a black man representing, you know, because there's some of us sometimes, we go into to huge places and we see a whole lot of folks and we become intimidated and we start looking like, say, well, we are lost folks, you know. Mm. And I want to portray a sense of confidence. And that's what it's all about. I was representing me, regardless of whatever color, creed or race. I just felt I was a human being, just doing what I do best. Where confidence is concerned.
Okay, what about you, Richie? Because you never wore the helmet either, did you?
Yeah, well, actually, I did towards the end of my career, when last couple of matches, when I realized I was going to call it quits. I said to myself,
you're concerned about your head.
Last couple of matches.
Not really. I just said, you know, it would be really unfortunate if I got an unlucky one. But really and truly, as a kid growing up in Antigua, we play one way, hard. And we are fierce competitors, and you cannot give the opposition the impression that you're a little bit timid. Mm. And if you put the helmet on, they would be saying, oh, you're a coward and stuff like that. So you have to portray this really positive and confident image if you want to survive. And trust me, even in practice, it was like fighting a war. And that's how we came up, you know. So we grew up being very positive, very confident, love to compete, love to take on the opposition. And I never really got used to wearing a helmet. And when I started wearing one, or when I tried to wear one, even feeling at short leg, it was most uncomfortable. It was like boxing in a phone booth, you know, yes. And you weren't really in control. And I believe as a batsman, it's about watching that ball and watching that ball very closely. And having a helmet on my head is very, very destructive. You know, that weight, you know, the
what
heat
about the vision
and the visor, you know, all the stuff. Mm. I mean, it was very destructive. So I said to myself, if I'm watching that ball, I mean, your natural instinct will avoid, you know, avoid the ball hitting your head, because you're gonna react, you know,
but instinctively at least.
Yeah, if you take your eyes off the ball, then you're likely to get gung, you know. And I remember the first time I put a helmet on in test match, I got hit in the head, you know. And I know that if I was wearing a helmet, there's no way I would have got hit in the head. But I mean, I have done it against helmet, but it was just my style. I felt comfortable just wearing my West Indies maroon floppy hat and going out there and just, you know, beating that leather.
That's right. And what was it like then in those glory days when, you know, the West Indies were king, you know, humiliating the likes of Tony Gregg, who was, of course, one of the senior England players in the 70s, and he was saying he was going to make the West Indies grovel, and he ended up groveling to you, I seem to remember, back in, was that 76?
That was in 1976.
Yes.
I felt at the time he brought some stuff which was pretty nasty stuff in other parts
of
the world.
From South Africa, some stuff. Yes.
And we felt, because you would have heard the words so many times over and over again about cricket being a gentleman's sport.
Yes.
You know, but I'll just give you one little story about that intimidating stuff, because these are some of the things when you're performing, little stuff which you have, that messages you must send to your opponents. And there were times when when things were going good, as you say, when you were kings, you would walk to the wicket, and if you wanted to send that message that says, I'm in an awfully bad mood today. And sometimes you're playing county cricket, guys would be in front of you and they would say things like, so you walk out to bat, good morning, Viv. They're trying to lure you into a false sense of security. Good morning, Viv. And if you want to send that message that, okay, I'm in a no talking mood today, and that fear throughout that whole cricket camp itself and the guys who are on the field, you would say things like, you'd bounce back by saying things like, so what is so good about the morning? And you say it in such an aggressive way, you know, with a few of the nasty stuff behind and all of a sudden this guy would just run straight up to the wicket where all his comrades are, and he'll say, and you can see all this, and you're making sure that you have a look. And you're trying to see what sort of reaction that they all have. And when that happens, you'll see he runs up to them and he says, hi guys, I'm afraid that Viv is not in the best of moods today. And you could see their faces in that sense. And this is what all the intimidating factor is about. Because certainly there's some guys who, when you're competing, are much weaker than some, and some stronger than the others and all that. Mm. But these are, and that was the message which we sent to Tony Gregg in 1976 because
that's right.
It was one of the things that we were just obviously going into a team meeting that eve, and as we went in, there was this television which was blurring, and it was sort of a news topic at the time, and we stood in our tracks and watched the news clip, and Tony Gregg saying, "We're going to make them grovel with that South African, with that South African sort of an attitude, and the so-called the twang, the way in which they speak." Wow! And everyone just stood there and watched or hear him reveal these words. And Clive Lloyd said, "The meeting is over."
Wonderful.
The meeting is over. That was our motivational sort of a promo. Mm-hmm. And you know what took place after that.
Oh my word. Oh,
rest
my
is history.
Rest yes, is history yes, for yes. sure.
All right, 9:25 is the time. We're going to go to a track now. When we come back, we'll have more from Sir Viv and Richie Richardson. Do get your texts and your emails in. Go to the website, colourfulradio.com, and click on Email Me. Or if anybody wants to go live and speak to the guys, you can do so, 0800 999 8090.
Soulful sounds to lift your spirits. Colourful Radio.
That's who we are. We've got special guests in the studio right now. All-time West Indies cricket legends. In fact, global cricket legends, going back to the time when we were kings. We have Sir Viv Richards and Richie Richardson, two of Antigua's finest as well. They're here for the World Travel Market. They're also here to spread the word about their beautiful homeland. Now we've got Richard. No, not Richard. He's called Toby on the line. Toby, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Henry. You're very confused.
I'm very confused indeed. How are things?
Well, they're very well. I feel very bad that I've been excluded. I'm not allowed to.
We're very sorry about this, but we know you're such a cricket nut that if you were allowed in today, you'd have taken over the whole scene. So we kept you marginalised on a telephone line somewhere in northwest London. Now we've got the legends in the studio. You're the first one we've allowed through onto the airwaves on the line by calling 0800 999 8090. You've got them at your mercy. They're listening to you right now. What do you like to say?
I'd like, where are we? I want to know from Sir Vivian Richards there. Is Mulitaran a chucker?
I wouldn't say that. Because if he's still playing, which means that he's doing something which is right. So I would never ever say that he's chucking, because the authorities would have allowed him to still be on the circuit. And he's the world record holder, I think, in that sense where wickets are concerned.
But didn't they change the rules so that he wouldn't be a chucker?
You're the one who's saying he's a chucker, right?
Would you have been happy if he'd been bowling to you?
Well, there are a lot of other guys that I felt who were just as doubtful, who got away with it. So I think that it's a tough act in that sense, you know, because some of us makeup are so different, and I think that that he is one of these individuals rather different in that sense where bowling actions is concerned. That's my conservative sort of a view.
Very conservative. Toby, is there anything else you want to ask either of Viv, Sir Viv, or Richie?
Lots of things I want to ask. Would they like my autograph? That's one of the things I'd like to ask.
Okay, apart from that, do you have anything else you want to say?
You're trying to get me off, aren't you? You're frightened. I know.
Okay, you stay on the line. You stay on the line. I've got an email here from Anthony, who's saying this. I'll do this. He says, Richie, Sir Viv, as I lay in bed sick with a head cold, it's great to hear the two of you on the radio. Two questions for you. One, the cricket media often state how great the Aussie side were between 1995 and 2005, but they regularly lost test matches and series. Yet no one will say how great your team were between 1976 and 1995 in losing just one test series to New Zealand. And the Rebel team went to South Africa in 1983-4 and beat them too. How will the present... That's one question. And then two, how will the present West Indies team do, in your opinion, with your old friend Joel Garner as manager in Australia this month? You want to take the second question first? Perhaps you, Richie? What would you like to say about that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think Joel Garner's got a lot of experience in Australia, on and off the field. So I'm sure he'll be able to guide the guys along the right path. He's been there in the glory days. You know, he's a very good competitor. He was, and I'm sure he'll make a difference. where the team is concerned. So I have every confidence that they're going to go down there and represent well. I mean, I know by now they would have gotten rid of all the problems they've been having with the Western Cricket Board, and they're focusing on going down to Australia and playing really good cricket.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's hope. So you sometimes look at the state of the West Indies team and compare it to your own era and think, oh my God, how did we get into this situation?
You wouldn't believe it. We keep asking ourselves that question.
but a lot of you former players have been selectors too, so you're part of it, aren't you?
Yeah, but you see what happened? We have a problem where I think that we get people in positions, you know, who do not quite fit the position itself, and you have problems, and there's sometimes this friendship sort of thing which comes in, and the professionalism goes out the door. And I just believe that there's so many things which can be wrong with West Indies cricket, and there's so many people who look at one side in that sense. You may blame the board, but then you have maybe the Players Association as well. And I've always felt that if the two can maybe hit heads and come to the right decisions, it's all in the good or for the better of West Indies cricket. And I just found maybe in the last few years, they've been going in different directions, and what I believe have been the problem really would be the fact that there are so many personalities which are attached to West Indies cricket. In personalities presently now, maybe you mentioned about the money factor earlier.
Yes, as well.
For the love of money sometimes, you know, there are individuals who have certain other interests, and I just feel that there are times the cricket itself have been neglected.
Yes.
You know, we have to find some ways and means getting someone who really feels like, we know Richie and myself, the way we feel, there's something that's personally passionate about the way we think and feel about West Indies cricket. But for some reason, they do not like guys, I suppose, you know, who feel passionately about West Indies cricket, because certainly it's an obstacle in their way.
Uh-huh.
What about the young people coming up in the islands, in the West Indies? What about the argument that they're just not hungry enough for cricket anymore because they all want to be basketball stars and football stars, where the big money is, where the kind of celebrity is more? Do you think that that's a problem?
Yeah, I think we've lost the plot a little bit. And this has been going on for quite some time, where I don't believe that we promote cricket enough in the Caribbean. We don't expose the youngsters enough. There's too much exposure to American television. And it's having an impact on our society overall, with our attitude. We don't quite understand how the system works in America, but we look on TV and it looks glamorous and looks a particular way, and we think it's cool, and the youngsters gravitate towards that.
Yep.
It's up to people who are in authority, who are in control, to make sure that our youngsters in particular know our history. They're constantly reminded about our heroes of the past, our icons, our legends, and you know, and we've got to project our legends. We got to, you know, keep our history intact so they know. It's got to be in their faces. And I think, you know, for some reason now, cricket is not as attractive as it used to be.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that you know, we continue to produce talent. I think the talent for cricket is embedded in our genes, and we will continue to produce talented players, but it's how we harness all these talents, especially from a very young age, and bring them through right to the top. I think that the game has changed a lot, and we have not really moved on with the times, and I think that's why we are suffering today. Hopefully the West Indies Cricket Board can get itself together, and the players can realize how important it is for everybody to work together, work really hard, you know, be totally committed and give everything for their country. I mean, when we played, we were motivated by just going out there and playing for our country and doing well and representing the millions of Caribbean people around the world. And that's all we cared about.
Yeah.
Today, there are lots of other distractions. There are other focuses, you know, and we really need to get our cricket reorganized, you know, get things in place so the players know that financially they're secured. All they've got to do is to work hard, prepare themselves, get themselves ready, go out there and play to win, give all for West Indies cricket.
Beautiful. That's Richie Richardson with us, as is Sir Viv Richards, two global cricketing legends from back in the day, and they're with us here, and we're thinking about cricket, but also talking about politics and culture as well. We've got a number of people emailing in. Here's what you need to do to add your emails to the list here. Colourfulradio.com. That's www.colourfulradio.com. Click on email me. We'll try and get through as many as possible. There's a telephone number as well. It is 0800 999 8090. That's 0800 999 8090. That's free from all landlines and most mobile phones. We've got two big voices on the line. Toby Kell-Og, sir, you're still with us, are you not?
I'm still here, Henry.
Wonderful, wonderful. And the novelist and broadcaster, Diren Adebayo, who is a massive cricket fan, cricketing nut, as Sir Viv would say. Diren, good morning to you.
Hey, Henry, how are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful indeed. What do you want to say to our two special guests?
Well, first of all, to say welcome to them very much. They've given me a great amount of pleasure, both Sir Vivian and Richie, down the years. You know, it's been tremendous to be really, to be around at the same time as they have been, to see them all they did through the 70s, 80s and 90s. But I just had a really quick question, which is really to do with the standard of pitches and the pace of pitches that we see these days, and maybe even the standard of fast bowling, because it strikes me that I was lucky as a watcher of cricket to be around, say, from the mid-70s, mm-hmm. when, with Lillian Thompson and then the West Indies greats, the standards of fast bowling was very, very high.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And I felt that to be in the top five batsmen, and to be a batsman from one to five, as Vivian and Richie were, in those years was some of the hardest years to ever be a top-ranked batsman. Because the quality of fast bowling from around the world and the speed of the pitches, the difficulty of the pitches was something. But these days, the pitches are so bland, the quality of fast bowling since Courtney and Curtly retired and Donald and Wakan wasn't retired around 2000, the quality of fast bowling is probably the worst it's ever been in Test cricket history. So that you can't, I don't feel that you can take the figures, these very high averages of batsmen like Ponting and Tendulkar and even Lara, all that seriously, because it's never been so easy, you know. And I just wondered what they ascribe, or what's happened to the pitches, especially, for example, in the Caribbean, where, you know, in the 60s, 50s, the Kensington Oval had the reputation of being one of the quickest pitches in the world, you know. And the pitches there now are very slow. In the last England tour of the Caribbean, we saw these very boring run fests, mm-hmm. where one side was scoring 500 runs and the other side was scoring 600 in reply.
Diren, both of our guests are smiling, both of them smiling, very keen to answer that point.
Yeah,
in fact, Saviv, go on, Diren, very quickly.
I get the impression that the powers that be in cricket think the only thing that the public likes is batsmen scoring runs and scoring sixes. As a watcher, I like to see batsmen getting knocked over and wickets being taken.
And working hard to see.
I just like to see wicket. There's nothing beats a wicket being taken.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that last day, oh God, when England got bowled out for 40 plus in the last series. And I was there in Trinidad. Yeah, I was there in Trinidad in 94 when Curtly Ambrose took 6 for 26 or whatever, and England were bowled out for 40 plus again. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to beat those days. It's amazing. And it's just the Test cricket, to watch it now, it just isn't as fun as it was. The thing that I loved from the 70s to the 90s.
Well, let's put some of your points to Saviv, Diren, about the pitches, first of all.
Well, let me first say, before I get into that you know your stuff, man.
Oh, believe me, in a moment, we're going to get some stats from you, Diren, and also from you, Toby, as well, because I know Toby is a master statistician as well, aren't you, sir?
I am, and I've got to say, I think that's a pretty loaded question. I'll be coming back to that in a moment.
Okay, Saviv.
Well, yeah, just to answer that question, really, I try and answer it as humorously as possible. I can remember when we had those quick pitches in Barbados one time, and we were knocking teams over, I think for England for that matter, in 2 and 2.5, 3 days. And the groundsman, we went out one day, and I was captain, and I looked at the wicket, and I said, hey, what's wrong, guys? This wicket totally looks different. And the guy said to me, hey, Viv, man, I've got a family. And all of the guys that do have a family to feed, we are getting paid by the day.
Oh, super.
You know, so that's one reason I think why that would have happened.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Okay, so so on those pitches, you take the point, don't you?
I definitely take the point. The wickets are very dead, for that matter, and
I certainly take your point. That is why I had us to big you up in terms of what I think you know about the fast bowling factors and things like that. But for sure, I myself, not maybe being knocked over by a fast bowler, but to be standing where we were at the times, first slip, second slip, or third slip, as may it be, and seeing those wickets tumble at times, go flying past Jeff Dujon and
yes.
and all that stuff, that was exciting stuff. That's when you're on the field, not when you're batting.
Excellent. Duren, do stay with us. Toby, you had something to say. You want to come back on some of these points?
Only briefly, that I actually think that I don't really agree with the question. It's true that the West Indies, of course, had a great series of fast bowlers, but one of the other things that's changed in the game is that spinners come back. And at that time, you know, there really wasn't, you know, there weren't the spin bowlers. You know, Shane Warne and Muditharan, whether he bowled straight or crooked or not, they weren't around at the time. So cricket just changed.
Well, Abdul Kader was a very fine bowler.
Yeah,
in the 70s, the West of India had their spin quartet.
Well, I started out against Bishan Singh Bedi.
Yeah.
Venkata Raghavan. I think Sanjay Sekhar, he was also involved.
Fantastic.
You know, it's only the fact that we found out that spinners wasn't doing it or getting it sus for us. And we found a formula. And I think Clive Lloyd, our past captain, an individual who I have an enormous amount of respect for, he gave us the inkling that, hey, these guys don't really like it also. You know, the Lilies and the Tomos may be giving it, but their batsmen didn't like it. And when we got a few guys on board, it's amazing how the shoe went on the other foot.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. Let's chat one or two stats. I mean, Duren, what are some of your favourite stats when you look back to the era of Sir Viv and Richie?
Well, one slightly smaller, lesser-known stat to re-Viv in the earlier days was, of course, what a tremendous cover fieldsman he was.
A lot of people forget that. I'm glad, man. I'm very annoyed that you're not in the studios, man.
Well, another time, next time. But one of my earliest memories of Sir Vivian was the 1975 World Cup final when, well, my first memory of that was Roy Fredericks hooking the ball for six and then falling on his stump.
Mm-hmm.
The first, but then Vivian, I don't believe you had your best day with a bat that day, but...
Well, I wasn't picked for batting then.
You know, but for batting. But so I seem to remember you running out, both Chappell brothers.
Yes, and there was another guy also by the name of Alan.
which will turn the final. And I remember again Richie Richardson in the early 80s, the first time I saw him, I think on a tour of Australia in, was it 83, 84?
Yeah, that's right.
I think you just toured India, then toured Australia,
right.
Just scoring a beautiful century. I forget who it was, but again, I could see he was very a hard wicket player.
Let me tell you this, not cutting you short, but Richie Richardson, for that matter, as a West Indian, no one would have scored more centuries against them, if I'm correct in saying that.
Well, that
because you know Richie's style. He always took fast bowlers on. And there was something special about him cutting also.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so which means those two shots is always going to break a fast bowler's heart.
That's right, and I always felt a little bit sad that Richie went up to Yorkshire because I was hoping to see him at Middlesex, but in Yorkshire the pitches are famously a bit slow and low, which is why, you know, Geoffrey Boycott prospered up there. And, I feared for the hard wicket player.
They wanted to change things up there a little bit, so that's why they invited
me. I know they invited Tim Dorker and other things as well, but... As Sir Vivian may know from the Headingley crowd, they're going to take some...
Listen, I'm so impressed, man. You know your stuff.
You know what, Duren, we're going to keep you on the line. Toby, final word from you. What would you want to say?
Well, I'm only going to say this. I'm absolutely awed to be, you know, to be in the presence of such greats, and I know that Richie and Sir Vivian will feel the same about speaking to me.
That's right.
Toby Kell-Hyphenog back on the Breakfast Programme tomorrow morning. Thanks a lot, Toby, for calling in.
Okay.
There we go. Duren's going to stay with us because I think he's earned the right to do so. We've got this email from Andy who says, morning, Henry, Juju and guests. I would just like to say it's great listening to Viv and Richie. I was too young when you guys played cricket to appreciate your talents, but my uncles, they just loved you guys. I remember the family having cricket match parties, everyone congregating in one house to watch the match, rum flowing, the women in the kitchen making roti patties, etc. Men shouting at the TV when the West Indies team scored. It was good times. I would always remember the joy you gave to our family. Thank you. That's from Andy.
Okay, yeah. Thank you too for that.
And then we have, let's have a look, from Anthony, who calls himself the Pimpernel. Hey, boys, I know my stats too. Okay, Andy, Anthony, give us some stats then. What would you want to remind us of? I suppose the fastest century ever. So, Viv, did you not...
1986, Antigua Recreation Ground.
Thanks for reminding me. Listen, man, I've got to take you guys out at some point, man. There's somebody, at least, there's somebody who knows what you did.
Do you feel to a degree, Richie and Saviv, that, okay, you really played out of your skin, you did so much both in the world of cricket and, of course, beyond, you know, culturally, and people don't really remember what you did?
Yeah, that is true, and that is why I said earlier that we need to preserve, you know, our heritage, our history, and, you know, so that the youngsters can continue to thrive and thrive on what we've done in the past. So, you know, cricket is very important to us in the Caribbean, and, you know, we need to make sure that cricket lives on, you know, because when West Indies are doing well, everybody in the Caribbean is on a high, you know, business prosper, you know, but it just feels really, really good. So we need to bring back those glory days, and one of the things that we're going to have to do is to really, you know, let our younger people know what happened in the early days, how we did it, so they can do it again.
The World Cup, of course, was held in the West Indies. How many years ago was it now?
Just two.
I was there anyway. Wow. At the time. And I know there was a real sense, I was in Barbados, and there was a real sense of disappointment that it wasn't really what we hoped it would be. And I'm wondering what you guys think about that, and if you agree, why it wasn't.
Well, I certainly was very disappointed, because I think we were looking forward to showing the world what the Caribbean has to offer, not only in terms of playing cricket on the field, but in terms of hospitality. And we wanted to put on a Caribbean show. We wanted to be a World Cup with a difference, a World Cup with Caribbean style, Caribbean flavor. And we were deprived of that. I think there were too many stipulations, rules, regulations, and things that Caribbean people are not accustomed to. And I think the ICC were a bit insensitive in dealing with the Caribbean. They also put a lot of pressure on us, saying that it's got to be this way, it's got to be that way, when they know this is how we do it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
A lot of nonsense, bringing music into the grounds,
exactly,
and food,
you know,
and drink. And
every
all the
other
things,
way, yeah, apart from the Caribbean
way. Yep. So, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, I mean, they were going to make their money before the event happened, so they didn't really care too much. That's how I see it, you know. And they promised us a lot of things. They say we're going to make money, we're going to this, we're going to that, and we didn't get the opportunity to do that. So to me, it was a disappointment. But I'm hoping that the 2020 next year in the Caribbean would be different, and they would have learned the lesson. They would have realized, look, it is in the Caribbean, and it has got to be the Caribbean way.
Indeed. Got a couple of texts here. Here's the number 80818. That's 80818. Start your text with the word colourful, as in colourful. Leave a space, then write your message. And Terry says this: can you ask Viv and Richie? Well, we've kind of done this in a way, Terry, but we can do it again. What were their respective career highlights? That's from Terry. Richie, would you like to start off? What was your highlight, and when you look back?
Well, to be honest, you know, when I first joined the team, you know, I always wanted to play for the West Indies from a very early age. When I was about 9, I was walking. My mom sent me somewhere, and
this is in Antigua. Yes,
in Antigua. Yes. So West Indies were playing against Australia, and nobody was doing anything. Everybody was just glued to, you know, a small transistor radio, listening and getting excited and calling names and everything. And I'm saying, why are these people reacting like this? And I started paying attention, and I started hearing names like Sobers and Hall and Griffith and stuff. And I said, these guys must be doing something really good for the country. I probably would like to be like them one day. And then suddenly I started taking cricket a little bit more seriously, and I said to myself, I want to play for West Indies one day. And I started working really, 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 really hard, you know, and the rest is history. So sorry, I forget the question.
No, just in terms of your highlight, because
yeah, career. Sorry, yeah, well, yeah, I was gonna say that my highlight was after I made it to the team. It was like, wow, Clive Lloyd, Viv Richards, Michael Holing, you know, these guys, Malcolm Marshall, and it was like being thrusted into heaven of stars. And it was, I just couldn't believe it, but very quickly I got my feet under the ground and realized I had to really work hard and start myself. But my real highlight was the fact that I was in a highly professional setup, guys who set very high standards, who go out on the field and show the world that they can play cricket at its best, and to have beaten a team that on paper that I thought was a very, very strong team, to beat them 5-0 consecutively in Test match cricket. I didn't play a lot of the Test matches, but I was part of the setup, and I feel very proud about that. And to me, that's the highlight of my career, to have beaten England twice in test matches. What do they call it, whitewash or blackwash?
Well, blackwash back then, I think. These days,
now it wouldn't be allowed.
In the Caribbean, blackwash.
Yes.
In England.
Saviv, your own particular career highlight, what would you say?
Well, I felt when we first won the 1975 World Cup,
yes,
under Clive Lloyd, that would have been the most the period where you felt elated more than anything else, and you felt that certainly you have achieved something because of all the stuff which took place in the Caribbean. You know, you had your friends telling you what's going on there, and the follow up factors, and whether folks wanted the team to win or not. But when we won that first World Cup in 1975, and to know that you yourself played a little part in helping.
More than a little part, I would say.
Is the teamwork work factor. And up to this day, even though we went on to win in 1979 as well,
yeah,
it's always the one that you win first is the one that you appreciate, you know, and doing something collectively as a team, as a West Indian team as well, also yeah, because there's so many things used to be said about us, that we are from so many different islands with our differences, but they don't think we'll have a different individualistic talents and all that,
yeah,
but we'll never ever be able to put it collectively well together. And to have accomplished winning with the West Indies team itself, to me, was the sort of togetherness, mm-hmm, that I felt helped the Caribbean, this integrating factor, and all the stuff of us coming together and how we felt about one another in the islands. I think that was the benchmark for what we have presently, and I hope that it lasts.
Definitely.
That's beautiful. Well, we've got five signed mini cricket bats. So how big are these? About a foot high?
You cannot play with them, I think.
You may have
to give it to a newborn kid.
They're not very big, are they? But they've been signed by both of you, by Saviv and Richie, and we've got five of those to give away. We should ask a question. Should we make it easy or difficult?
I think we should make it very easy because we're running out of time.
All right, I've got a question. Which beautiful Caribbean island do both Saviv and Richie hail from? Which beautiful island in the Caribbean?
I'll bet you nobody gets that right.
And it starts with A. Now, you can either text your answers to us, okay? You start your text with the word colourful, leave a space, then a message. The number, of course, is 80818. But you do need to tell us who you are. Give us your full name and your address, as well as the answer, okay? Or you can go to the website, colourfulradio.com, click on email me. Trust me, you do want these lovely miniatures. They're absolutely superb. They're bigger than the Ashes, you know, the little urn. They're bigger than that. It's about how high are they? Maybe 10 inches high?
Maybe 14 inches.
Yeah, 14 inches. Okay, so go to the website, colourfulradio.com. Which beautiful Caribbean island do our two special guests hail from? Or you can even call us now, 0800.
Make it a little harder. What about the island? Because we have a sister as well.
Okay.
So which means
okay, so give us both names.
Both names the, of
yeah, okay, yeah, so yeah, it's right. So it's A,
it's
and
A and B.
A and
yeah,
B.
Good
A
stuff.
B. The number 0800 999 8090. That's 0800 999 8090.
Or you can just go to the website colourfulradio.com and click on email me. Got a couple of emails dropped in there.
That's right, yes, we certainly do. This is from Ivan, who says, morning Juju and Henry. Viv Richards is my all time sporting hero. This is a nice surprise. I listen to you guys when I'm working early shift. Didn't know he was on. Would it be cheeky to ask him to say hello to Ivan?
Hello, Ivan. How are you doing, man?
Duren, fast approaching the end of the program. Your highlights, I suppose, from the two gentlemen's careers.
Well, you know, I have so many magnificent memories. As Viv said, sort of early ones are, you know, great memories. I never saw it, but I was reading it at the time. Just Viv's sort of century in Australia in 75-76. I think in the last two tests, when, you know, West Indies had a really hard time in that series.
That's right.
And Viv began the fight back with a wonderful century and a 90-odd as well.
Yeah, man.
And then that led into the whole 1976 year when West Indies came over here and Viv got so many runs that summer. And the 2-3-2 at Trent Bridge, I thought was an amazing innings.
Can't you go wrong one point at one little instant?
No.
But so with Richie, I've got fantastic memories of him as a player, and just of the fact that I was fearing that the West Indies were about to not be as good, and then Richie came along in the early 80s, and I can see that that's confirmed. But unfortunately, I have a slightly sad memory with Richie, because for me, the day when I knew the West Indies supremacy was finished was a certain day in the World Cup in 95-96, when West Indies should have beaten Australia. Had an easy bounce of runs to make, and unfortunately Westerners didn't quite make the runs.
10 seconds, Darren.
And all I can remember is Richie at the non-striker's end, almost about to explode with anger and just sadness to see all these other players, the procession of batsmen falling. At that moment, for me, that was the beginning of the end.
Darren, thank you very much indeed for that absolutely wonderful contribution this morning. We're all clapping you here in the studio. That brings our special show to an end.
Yes, my favourite highlight of Viv Richards and Richie Richardson is them coming into the Colourful Radio studio today. Thank you, guys.
Colourful Radio, where music hasn't lost its soul.
Thank you.